And I think food is the ultimate canvas. It engages all the senses, all five senses, sometimes the sixth sense, that no other art form can. It brings people to the table in conversation. Some of my favorite childhood memories were around the table, all were in the kitchen helping my grandparents get food ready. If we could look at food that way, we could spare ourselves a lot of disease, a lot of heartache, and a lot of the world's problems in actually being able to create and give food rather than having food insecurity.
Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. This is Janine Ledford, your host and the creator of the groundbreaking concept of intercultural creativity, which is the intersection of creative thinking and cultural competence. So if you're looking for new, exciting ways to build a positive culture of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging that sparks creativity, this is your place. We have exciting guests in all types of fields who highlight how creative thinking best thrives in a culture of diverse collaboration. At the Create and Grow podcast, you'll discover how inclusion drives innovation. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to the Create and Grow podcast. I am so excited to present to you my next guest. I only bring you the best, and today is no different. If there's one thing you can say about Maria, it's this. She might be petite in stature, but she has carried the giant task of raising two kids as a single mom while building her seven-figure business, authoring books and patenting and promoting her Eat Cleaner product line, and now filling the role as a newlywed. Congratulations.
Thank you.
She is a chef who I have had the wonderful opportunity to partake of her creation. She's a nutritional coach and author, like I said before, an award-winning entrepreneur and inventor. Maria was featured on the Emmy-nominated cooking show Recipe Rehab for 3 seasons, and she's been seen on the Food Network in over 200 cooking segments. And she's the founder of Eat Cleaner, which we're so excited to learn about. I have your products and I love them. And her latest book that I have, Eat Like You Give a Fork, The Real Dish on Eating to Thrive. I love this book. It is helping my creativity, and I'm so excited to bring you to the audience. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Janine. It's really nice to be here.
So we're just so excited to dive in into your experience as a chef, an entrepreneur, and a creative creator. Can you tell the audience a backstory about how you came to be the amazing woman you are today?
You're so sweet. Wow. Hearing your introduction, I'm like, I guess I have done some things in my career. But the one that I'm the most proud of is raising my kids. For me, my journey into the world of food was not necessarily a direct one. I really wanted to be an athlete. I had just this dream of being in the Olympics. I did gymnastics in my younger years. I played competitive soccer. And wellness, fitness was always really important to me. And I figured out relatively early on that in order to be exceptional in sports, you would need to get your food dialed in, because the people that I was seeing that were doing really well were eating well, with the exception of some that just were freaks of nature and could eat whatever they want. So I was, let's say, health curious at a young age. And I think this happens to a lot of athletes, kind of got into this rabbit hole, and it actually ended up turning into an eating disorder. And, you know, I talk about it really openly. I mentioned it in my book. I've talked about it in lots of interviews and in a couple of other books that I've written. And the reason that I bring it up is because I think sometimes too much of a good thing can be a disaster. And my real goal after having gone through that was to try and find balance again. You know, when you love something so much, and I really do love food, and I love the art of being able to be creative, like you are talking about, in how I bring things to the table. I like kind of creating things out of nothing, because for a long time I struggled with as a single mom and didn't have many resources. So sometimes you have to be really creative with what you have. And I think food is the ultimate canvas. It engages all the senses, all five senses, sometimes the sixth sense, and that no other art form can. it brings people to the table in conversation. Some of my favorite childhood memories were around the table, all were in the kitchen helping my grandparents get food ready. And so that became sort of my guiding light, I guess you could say, or like my motivation for wanting to get healthy versus kind of taking it to an extreme. And so I went to cooking school. I got a certificate in holistic nutrition, and that kind of redirected my course to go from not just food, but food that heals, food that nourishes, food that allows you to live your best life and serve your purpose wholly. And I think if we could look at food that way, we could spare ourselves a lot of disease, a lot of heartache, and a lot of the world's problems in actually being able to create and give food rather than having food insecurity.
There's so much there, and I'm so excited for this conversation because I get to look at creative thinking through the lens of food and diet and creativity within the earth, right? The good food that comes from the earth. What connections do you see there from your lens? Is creativity and the earth giving us food?
Oh, so much so. I mean, just think about what we have on our God-given earth, you know, to play with, like literally every color and every shade of the rainbow. One of my favorite things to do is to go to the farmer's market. It's like a pastime for me. And I'm like a kid in a candy store every time. I never cease to be amazed by the variety, by just the offerings, how they change seasonally, the colors, the shapes. This is all from a seed, and it all comes from the ground. So absolutely, in order to embrace the creativity that can come from the kitchen, it's your medium, right? It's like picking your paints. It's like, this is my palette here. That's what food is. And in my book, I really tried to celebrate that color. And I hope that when you flip through it, you see it's color screaming at you. There's no artificial colors added. There were no paints used in the styling of that food. That food was all just real food. No shellacs, no crazy things that are used in food styling. And that's, to me, the best way to do it. And so intrinsically, by celebrating what nature has to offer us, we have to take care of nature, and we have to be aware of how to care for the soil so that it doesn't get stripped of nutrients. I mean, it really is it's what our food depends on. Therefore, we have to take care of it. So yeah, I think for me, color is nature. Nature is everything. What can we take from nature that then feeds us, and we're in a symbiotic relationship, so we have to care for it.
Dr. Daniel Siegel talks about the integrated brain, right? And he's a child psychologist and works a lot with neuroscience as well. And he has the term interpersonal neurobiology. And so he talks about how an integrated brain is a healthy brain with integrated relationships. But he also talks about our integration with nature and the earth, us being more mindful of our connectedness with the earth. And really, that is basically a part of your work, understanding how the kitchen is intrinsically connected with the earth and how that it connects to us too.
Definitely. We created a line of products. I invented it with my father. He's an environmental scientist. So certainly his work in science definitely influenced a lot of my upbringing and just views on our relationship with the environment. And that product line is all about making sure that the variety of produce and seafood and poultry that we're eating, clean protein, phytonutrients, you know, fiber, all of the things that we actually are able to absorb properly, and we're eating clean food, you know, because the truth is, if you're eating food that's laced with toxin, that's depleted of nutrients, or that's waxed so that wax seals in pesticide residue and bacteria and the things that can make you sick, we're defeating the purpose. So Eat Cleaner is lab proven to remove up to 99.99% of that residue that can cause foodborne illness. And it's also uniquely formulated to extend produce shelf life up to 5 times longer. So going back to honoring the environment, you know, food waste is a huge problem. Forget about ugly produce. Like, whoever came up with that marketing term needs to see me, by the way. I am so unhappy with that. But, you know, forget about that. Let's make sure it doesn't end up in the trash to begin with, right? So if we process our produce for our own homes in a way that is user-friendly and allows us to consume way more produce than we ever would normally, that's winning. You know, I don't care about extravagant sauces and, you know, French technique. I mean, it's all great and it makes you a better cook, but the bottom line is if you can eat an apple that doesn't have 52 different pesticides on it, right? Or a basket of strawberries that can last instead of 2 days in the refrigerator, maybe 7 or 10 days or even 14 days. Mm-hmm. Isn't that really where we can make a huge impact in our own kitchen? So that's what Eat Cleaner does. And we think that Eat Cleaner should be in every home. But you know, the truth is if we can just eat the rainbow, if we can mm-hmm. eat by sight and let that lead us, we're halfway there, right? I mean, yeah. And I'm not talking Skittles here. I'm not talking artificial flavors. In fact, it's kind of funny, not to digress, but I'm a little ADD. I bought a gingerbread house for my kids to put together. Okay, my kids are 20 and 16. So it's like totally too old for this, but I make them do it anyway. We have fun doing it. But I was looking at the ingredients in the gingerbread house kit and I almost threw up. I was like, this is horrific. Wow. You cannot eat this. Like every artificial color, hydrogenated palm oil, so much crap. And I was like, oh, we can't eat this. I mean, we have to know how to read labels. We have to discern for ourselves. We have to think before you bite kind of people that use our frontal lobe to make decisions versus our cravings versus our animal desire to eat something. I know that's a long-winded answer, but we need to take accountability for our health. And by virtue of that, the thing that we do that most contributes to our health is food.
We don't think about that. And me being an educator by trade in the K-12, we don't really give our students that this critical type of information on how to critically evaluate what you're putting in the body, especially with the easy choices around our neighborhood that fast food and greasy food, and even the food that we think looks good, like the fruit that we can't, that has invisible toxins on it. You know, we're just not trained to see that. And it makes me even think of why aren't we trained to see that? Kind of like, why don't we have financial literacy in K-12? Oh, is it purposely planned this way? Mm-hmm. Because if you don't eat well, you do get sick and now you're a chronic patient of meds for the next 30 years. I don't know where, what I'm not talking about like conspiracy theories, but just why can't we do better as a nation and start with the youth so they grow up thinking this way?
Yeah, I worked really closely with several school districts here in Southern California, one of them being LA Unified, one of the biggest school districts in the country. And they did a really great program. Unfortunately, it got nixed by people within the organization. I don't want to get too political, but the point is, I think there are good intentions. And I think that there are some strides being made. You know, there are a lot of great school nutrition directors that want to make a difference, and they do that within their own district. But if they don't have that desire, certainly, you know, funding is very limited, which is really sad. But if they have the desire, they get it done. And I've seen it. I've seen it work really, really well when there is a desire. Mm-hmm. But we can't, you know, as parents, we can't be apathetic. As citizens like that understand that your health comes from what's on the end of your fork, you know, we need to also make a difference. And parents can do that by joining a PTA and instead of doing a cookie drive or a candy fundraiser, you know, let's think of other creative ways to do that. Can we do a farm basket, you know, of some sort? Could we do something that actually raises awareness instead of leading to childhood diabetes, you know, to actually make kids healthier? We have to take action. And I, as a mom, have seen both sides of the coin many, many times. I also know that in low-income school districts, you know, sometimes that's the only meal they're getting for the day. And during COVID, it was just, you know, really, really a tough situation because funding was cut even more. And so the health of the lunches was deteriorating, you know, that much more. But if we can be a voice and we can even make small changes, like I guarantee you, if somebody goes to the store and purchases better food and leaves out the sugary cereal and the sugary one serving drinks and the sodium filled, you know, processed food, if we make better choices, I've done it time and time again, we're not necessarily spending more, but it does require us to make better choices and to leave out the garbage. And it's just, you know, even with full grown adults, I mean, part of what I talk about in the very early chapters of the book is retraining your taste buds. I mean, if you were conditioned to always eat hyper sugary food and super salty processed food, guess what? It adulterates your taste buds so that when you taste an apple, you can't just enjoy the simple beauty of a tannin filled apple that's got sweetness and crunch and texture and all of these things that we have to strip back in order to embrace again. It's like we got to tear down the house a little bit. And so that requires us to use our frontal lobe again, which children don't have a developed frontal lobe. We can't expect them to make the best decisions. We have to help them make them, right? And, you know, start by getting rid of the things that don't serve us. Do a pantry purge, do a fridge rehab, get rid of the stuff that doesn't serve you and start over again. We don't spend more than, I would say we probably spend less than the average family, but what we buy is meaningful. So, you know, it's, and really we have to detox our refrigerators and our pantries just as much as we have to detox our lives of, you know, what social media or what, you know, people tell us we're supposed to be doing when it doesn't really serve us.
And that's so good because there's so much there. And I love how you referenced the prefrontal lobe. I'm a big neuroscience person. So I understand what food does to our brain, what chemicals get released when and where, and how our brain can get hijacked. There's a great book that I have behind me called The Hijacking of the Human Brain. And he talks about food as well and how we can, yeah, basically retrain. And earlier you talked about taste, you know, like eat the rainbow. And in my work with intercultural creativity, we have the seven gems, which are the colors of the rainbow. So I love that. But in observation, the gem of observation, there's cultural observation, like how do we observe other people in complexity and know how to perspective shift and adapt in various culture situations. But also, how do we observe environmentally for our creative thinking? And eating the rainbow, tasting the rainbow, not Skittles, but tasting the rainbow of food, you know, what does that look like as far as opening our palate? How's our thinking and our cognition really affected by our eating habits and tasting the rainbow?
Well, you know, we eat with our eyes first, right? So if something looks exciting and interesting and colorful, it's intriguing. I think especially for kids, you know, kids are they like to play with a whole box of crayons. So if food mirrors that, how beautiful is that to start with? And I think, you know, something that I've done in schools is I've done a tasting experience for children where I take a variety of different fruits and vegetables, raw, completely raw, nothing added to it. And I allow them to taste each one and describe it in their own words. So what is this yellow tomato taste like? How is the yellow one different than the red one? And what does that mean to you? And letting them actually verbalize that and share that is really, really fun. I heard some really fun things. You know, it's like, what does the strawberry taste like? It tastes strawberry-ish. You know, it's like cute. But, you know, it just does resonate when you can taste something in its raw form and cognitively understand it, because your tongue, the receptors in your tongue, your taste buds are basically transmitting to your brain and forming an opinion. Now, you know, what's also interesting is that when you are playing with things that are colorful, science shows that you become more satiated. You become more, because you're pleased with what you're seeing, you're taking it in and you're enjoying it. You also tend to eat a little bit more slowly to engage with it. You know what I mean? So I just think there's so much power to it. And I think there's a lot of power to teaching people how to even grow their own. It doesn't have to be a complicated garden. For a lot of people, they don't have the space. I mean, I have so many herbs and even sprouts that I have on my windowsill. And just being able to add some fresh things that you have grown, there is a special kind of ownership in that, that you've seen it sprout from a seed into real food. And I think that connection, that honoring of the time and the effort and the cultivation is a really beautiful way to engage with our food too. So I highly, like, I'm literally, there's a sprout kit on Amazon for $15. Buy that with a bag of seeds. And I think that's probably one of the best gifts you can give to a child or even an adult, and have that real vibrant live food be part of your repertoire.
Yeah. I really want to make sure people understand this, that how this topic is highly connected with their creative thinking in so many other areas. For me, I was doing this with my son because of my research, I understand how important multi-sensory engagement is. And so we need to really increase that. And when we're learning a concept or when we're having experience, are we really engaging as many senses as possible? So even when I was cooking, a lot of times our kids or the people who we're cooking for in our household, they see the end result, right? Mm-hmm. Very rarely do they stand next to us the whole entire time, unless they're trying to learn or so. And I made a point of showing him, hey, well, here's what a cumin. I was that person who had the like 25 piece spice set and only use pepper and maybe basil for like 10 years. And I was like, and then I bought a cookbook and I was like, what is this coriander stuff? What is this cumin?
There's a lot paprika? More in that box, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And so it really opened up mind map in my gates, basically. Hmm. And to be a highly creative person, you have to have open sensory gates. And so when I do with my son is I show him part, before it gets to the whole. So we look at the basil, we touch the basil, we smell the basil. I'll even break off a small piece so he can taste it. And I did that with the spices and the other ingredients. And then he saw putting together and the whole process of whatever I was doing. And then he got to eat it like a normal meal. And so I just want people who are listening that's a concept called part whole, that you're showing your kids and yourself that there are parts that come together to create the whole. And when you think creatively, when you're in business, the boardroom, people who are able to break down wholes into separate parts, that's a creative thinking process. And so we can do that in the kitchen every day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that so much. I love that you do that with kind of experiencing each ingredient too, because I think that is where shift happens for people. And I think there's no better survival skill that we could teach our children than knowing how to cook for themselves. You know, my daughter went away to college this year, and
Congrats. It's
so cute because she always sends me like pictures of what she's making. And look, Mom, I have all my produce out. I washed everything with eCleaner and I taught my roommates how to do it. Look, it's such a great life skill. She will always be able to take care of herself. And she'll always be able to kind of mastermind her own health because she knows how to make those choices. And wow, I mean, I really, really do believe, just like you said, financial literacy needs to be part of school. So does this. It really needs to be something that we just inherently know. You know, it's kind of funny and a little sad, but it really caught up on food marketing terms like gluten-free or vegan or paleo or, and unfortunately, what that does is it just sells product. It doesn't necessarily tell you if the product that you are cooking is good for you or not. And so what people tend to fall into are trend-driven dietary habits versus really just being able to say, okay, yeah, I know that eating half my plate of fruits and vegetables, especially non-starchy vegetables, is the way to go. If I do that and then I eat good quality protein and I add an unrefined carbohydrate, like instead of thinking like diet, think in quadrants of the plate. That's really where we can lead to better health. I've met very, very healthy vegans and I've met very unhealthy. I've met very healthy omnivores and I've met very I don't think one diet is going to lead you down the path of health in and of itself, because there are all those choices we make every day, multiple times a day, that dictate that.
And that's such a good point. I saw a picture once that said Oreos are vegan. But you know, there may not
I
be this.
I almost like laughed out loud, honestly. Vegan mac and cheese now from Kraft. I'm like, okay, but it's just enriched garbage macaroni. And it's, what are all these things that they're adding to? Like, we have to be a little, we have to like not be seduced by the label. Mm-hmm. And part of what I teach in the book and in my program, I have a program called Eat to Thrive, and it's an online program that people basically watch videos and read the overview and then actually make some recipes from the book. So it's kind of like this interactive experience. But what I try and impart is, instead of just being driven by a label, really learn how to read a label. Really learn how to understand what a label means, what a macronutrient is, and how you should be feeding your body. You know, a lot of people avoid fat, but fat is actually not a bad thing. It's actually a really important thing to add, as are carbohydrates. So we vilify certain words, and then we're stuck like in a cycle chasing our tails going, what should we eat? Well, it's always been the same. It's the fundamentals have never changed. It's just marketing spin that wants us to buy certain products. So let's kind of, I want to teach people how to cut through the garbage so that they can really command their own health.
So quick example. So quick non-starchy vegetables are like your broccoli, your zucchini,
leafy greens,
your squash, leafy greens,
celery, radish, kind of the whole gamut of, if you were to go to the fresh section of your produce department, everything that is in refrigeration is basically non-starchy. Bell peppers, cucumbers, all of that good stuff. And it's okay to eat the starchy ones too, just in not the all-you-can-eat format, so to speak. Yes. But
and is that your potatoes and yams and sweets, like
exactly.
Sweet potatoes?
Okay. And vegetables like beets and carrots and all of the squash, things like that. However, those foods, I don't want people to misunderstand, they're all very good for you. And they also serve as a slow burning carbohydrate. So they can be your slow burning carbohydrate choice instead of maybe brown rice, for example. But I encourage people not to load up on two of those in a meal, pick one or the other.
Awesome. And unrefined carbohydrates, are those what you just listed?
Yeah. So things like brown rice and millet and quinoa. Quinoa is actually a seed, so it has good fat and protein in there as well. Those can all serve as low burning carbohydrates choices for people, even bread. I mean, I know bread is like turned into like the evil empire, but look, people ate bread for thousands of years and never had problems. But the bread looked very different from some of the packaged processed breads that we have now. Bread should be flour and water and maybe a starter. I make sourdough bread, and my best friend gave me this incredible starter. And it is literally the starter flour, and it's a whole grain organic flour and water. And that's it. There's no sugar added. There are no fillers added. Like, that is it. So we have to kind of come back to the table and look at what is on the label instead of just discounting the whole category.
So macronutrients, lastly, what are some examples of, about that?
Okay, the big macronutrients are protein, carbohydrates, and fat. And depending on where you are in your life, if you're female, if you're male, if you are whatever age you're at, whatever you your demands of your workout schedule or your goals are, those macronutrient percentages will vary slightly. So like for the average person that is maybe active, but not like competing, for example, if you can do about a 40%, 35 to 40% of your daily intake coming from protein, about 25 to 30% coming from carbohydrates, and about 15 to 20% coming from fat. That's usually, that's like an average range. Now, if you are eating, you're following a keto program, for example, your fat intake is going to be more of the 40%. And I say that before you start a program where you are eating that much fat, that people definitely consult their doctors, because it's not for everybody. It can be used effectively as a way to shed weight because it programs the body to start burning fat instead of carbohydrates. Carbohydrates are what are available and easy to convert into energy, into glycogen. So that's why those diets can be effective for people who are trying to lose weight, but they aren't always long-term strategies. So if you're doing anything that is, I would say, considered kind of like extreme, and that can go for protein too. Some people are eating like they're doing paleo and they're eating 50, 60, maybe even 80. Somebody was telling me that they were eating pretty much 90% of their diet was protein. And I was like, that is a lot of stress on your kidney, your liver, your pancreas. You know, it's just, it's a lot of stress on your system. And it's also a lot of stress on your gut. We need to kind of really, that needs to sound off a warning bell, because anything that is done in extremes, even fruit, like if you only eat fruit and you don't eat any, like there's a problem. So I think we need to live in a balance of some sort that's reasonable. And those numbers may change slightly. Like I'm training for a physique competition where I need to eat more protein than I normally do. I'm normally more of a carb girl. And so I have to tweak what my choices are in order to meet my protein needs. And your life will shift and ebb and flow as during different phases. But I think the warning light is whenever we take one macronutrient to an extreme where everything is really, really off balance, we should be kind of, you know, questioning that.
That sounds, going back to our prefrontal cortex, right? And making those decisions. So my last thing I want to talk about is when I saw you actually in action in one of the workshops that I was a part of, I saw how you laid out the food beautifully, but you really made those cultural connections. And part of my work is intercultural creativity, looking at cultural competence and different ways that we can connect with people with different lived experiences. And you used great descriptive words of what we were actually taking part of, where the food was coming from, and how do you use your cuisine to culturally connect and learn?
Thank you.
And increase your cultural competence.
I remember you like did a really good job of eating too. I was like, go girl, it's awesome. I loved it. I love when people enjoy the food and eat it and eat all of it. So for me, being Middle Eastern, there is a huge connection to my culture through the food. And there is a huge connection to people through the food. So it's the two best parts, really, I think, of being able to connect at the table is with the food and with the people that you're enjoying it with. So I think understanding that and having a reverence to it is really important, because it is a gift. I think when we are able to connect with our lineage and our heritage, it's our lifeline. And I love history. I used to sit, I lived in Egypt for a year and a half with my grandfather. And my favorite thing was to hear him tell me stories about my grandma, who had passed away, about my dad when he was young, about what Egypt looked like when he was growing up. And he would tell me these things in such great detail. And, you know, I would sit and watch him in the kitchen preparing eggplant. And I'm going to get emotional talking about this, but it's beautiful. You know, it's like, it's my heritage and my history in this life, you know, that I think if we can connect to that, it's like such an expression that goes beyond just being an eater, just being an animal. We have opposable thumbs. We are creative beings. We are most like our creator when we are creative. And if we can connect what means something to us, mm-hmm. that's where the magic happens.
And you certainly brought that magic in through the food. I have seen nothing like it, of really seeing you in your element and doing a great job connecting with the people who you were serving. I just, you know, as an educator and all the work that I do, I was highly, highly impressed. So I hope people just reach out to you. And you do events, right? You do corporate events?
I do. I do corporate events and corporate just teaching of wellness. We do online cooking classes for companies where I've literally walked hundreds of people in one class through how to make a better for you pizza, you know, taking foods that people would associate as being like unhealthy and turning them into foods that absolutely can have a place in your everyday. And I think that's where we can really help to make a difference, is let's not food shame. Let's just teach people how to do it better and take ownership for it. Because when you cook, you eat better, you eat less. And especially when you're with people at the table, you connect. And that's where the social good comes into the scene too.
That's a wonderful, wonderful soundbite, because that is basically the essence. And just looking at different ways for us to connect, especially connect with people with different lived experiences. So I am excited to just be sharing your work, your wisdom, and your wellness with my audience. And we are the diamonds here. I have a diamond. And as you saw with my work, we believe that everyone should shine bright like a diamond, and we're multifaceted and all that good stuff. But we asked our guests to leave our audience with one final gem. If you were to leave our audience with one final word of wisdom, what would that be?
I have the pen that you gave me, by the way, that has the diamond on it. It's my favorite. One word of wisdom is really to you own your health. I just did an Instagram post about this today. Your mama doesn't own your health. The government doesn't own your health. The grocery store doesn't own your health. You do. And you are the chef of your own kitchen and your own life, so to speak. So if you want to find your true purpose and you want to be the best version of yourself, you have to own your own health and make the best decisions that you can. And that requires you to be educated, and it requires you to have some willpower and use that frontal lobe we keep talking about. But it also invites you to be creative. And that's where we can make shift happen.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on the Create and Grow podcast. If people wanted to find you, where could they go?
The best place to connect with me is at eatcleaner.com. You can also follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Chef Maria.
Okay, awesome, awesome. Well, thank you so much for spending your time with us. I'm just so excited to cook. I'm so excited to show people where they can go and get the book themselves, go and get the products and make sure you're cleaning your food well, you're preparing your food well, and you're enhancing your creative ability, because don't forget, creativity is all about connecting the unconnected. And for you to just get new ideas of how to prepare the things that have already been in your home or the things that you walked past. I forgot to tell you that my son and I choose one new vegetable or fruit we've never seen before in Sprouts. And we go home, we feel it, we smell it, we taste it, and then we cut it open and explore with it. So he'll be sharing that. You can follow my son at the Creative Kid, or Creative Kid SL.
And oh, he shares, I will. I absolutely will.
And he shares some of his food creativity and his food curiosity. So that's a fun time. But thank you so much for coming on the show with us. And everyone, we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us at the Create and Grow podcast. We hope that you obtain some amazing gems and are able to see how you are creative and how we are more creative when we work well together. If you wish to learn more about our organizational training programs and professional development for companies, organizations, schools, and districts, visit cafestrategies.com. That's C-A-F-F-E strategies.com, where we have amazing keynote speakers and certified facilitators on board to help your organization learn how to build a climate of inclusion and innovation. We have groundbreaking book titles in our online bookstore that lay out the 7 gems of intercultural creativity, as well as our children's books that inspire the innate creative ability of our little ones. We thank you again for joining us and remind you to shine bright like a diamond. See you next time.